Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to my podcast, Introverted Queen, where I, an introvert, have conversation with other introverts about living in an extroverted world. If this is your first time tuning in, welcome. If you are a returning listener, thank you so much for listening, supporting, and sharing these episodes. In certain communities, the topic of mental health is almost never discussed. I've had numerous conversations with friends and family about this topic, and my guest today digs deep into mental health in the Caribbean community. Vanessa is a licensed psychologist who resides in the United States, and she specializes in child and adolescent psychology. We discuss the psychological effect of immigration and the gap that occurs between immigrants and their Canadian or American-born children. It's a great episode. Check it out. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good, good. Excited to talk about this topic.
Yes, thank you for coming back here. And we got great feedback from our last conversation about dating and relationships, so it was good.
I'm so happy to hear that.
And today we're going to talk about mental health in the Caribbean community specifically, so let's get into it.
Absolutely.
So you're a psychologist, you specialize in mental health in immigrants. What are the psychological effects of immigration?
Yeah, so in order to understand the psychological effects of immigration, we have to kind of explain the context and what brings about those psychological impact for any given immigrant population, not only from the Caribbean, but I'm going to focus more specifically on the Caribbean. But overall, one concept in psychology, which is called acculturation, and what acculturation means is that the change in attitude, beliefs, behaviors, values that one has to go through to kind of adapt to your host society. So let's say somebody from the Caribbean is immigrating to Canada or to the United States. So acculturation means like how much do you end up changing your attitudes, beliefs, values, and behaviors to the American ones or the Canadian ones in order to best adapt and navigate. And so with this acculturation process can be very stressful. As you can imagine, when you're coming from your country of origin, you have a set of values, attitudes, and beliefs that doesn't sometimes, depending on the host society, be it Canada, the US, somewhere in Europe, that sometimes it can be aligned, but sometimes it can often clash. And that causes a lot of stress. So out of acculturation comes also acculturative stress. So I have to explain these concepts to then further delve into the psychological concept. So since acculturation is how much you modify as an immigrant your attitude, values, and beliefs to adapt to the host society, there are different research has shown that there's different acculturation styles. And those different acculturation styles actually correlate to mental health well-being. So I'm going to first start with the one that has been deemed the most mentally healthy type of strategy, which is called the integration one, which is pretty much like as an immigrant, I kind of like still retain a lot of my values, attitudes, and beliefs from my country of origin, while also internalizing some of the values, beliefs, and attitudes from my host country. So as you can imagine, that's what we call also integration is also being bicultural, right? So I can still navigate the new world that I'm in, while still retaining my culture from home, because that's who I am. So I don't feel like I'm giving or sacrificing myself up. So that in the literature has been highly correlated with mental health, well-being, and things like that. Two kind of acculturation strategies that have been deemed and correlated with depression, with anxiety, with more mental health difficulties is one where we call assimilation. I think most people know assimilation. It's just where you're like, immigrating in the country and you're really giving up and letting go of the values, beliefs, behaviors, attitudes from your country of origin to only internalize the ones from your host society. So here you're like, kind of like, oh, I'm totally being everything American or everything Canadian. I'm rejecting everything Haitian or Jamaican, Grenadian, whatever. And that has been correlated with negative mental health outcomes, because you're giving up who mm-hmm. you are in order to fit a certain box. That's what you think you should do in order to best navigate. But in the process, you can have a lot of stress, a lot of anguish also about compromising who you are, right? And then the other acculturation strategy that has been being also with a lot of mental health difficulties is where one, and we've seen this, you can have immigrants that come to a host country, but they have a really hard time or have no desire to internalize or integrate some of the values, beliefs, and or learn. Or sometimes it could be obstacle getting in the way for them to internalize or to embrace, for lack of a better term, the values, attitudes, and beliefs of their host country. So they retain everything from their country of origin. And as you can imagine, this makes it difficult to navigate a new country if you do not kind of like adjust some of your values and attitudes to align with those of the country that you're in. So that's called separation, that particular acculturation style, but that also has been highly correlated in the literature with a lot of stress, as you can imagine. If you're kind of like, oh, first of all, if you're like, it's more difficult for you to learn the language of your host country, to understand their value system, or to abide by it, then it's harder to navigate and adjust to life there. So that also comes with a lot of stress. And then last but not least, there's a fourth category, which is called marginalization, where the person rejects everything about the host country, but also rejects everything about their own country of origin. That can often be seen in children of immigrants, especially children of Caribbean immigrants. I'm going to speak more specifically maybe to the United States, more so to Montreal, and I'll say what kind of like the difference is, where, as you know, in the United States, like, there's a Black population, but there's a lot of diversity within the Black population. But as a Black kid from Caribbean parents, you can be mistaken for being African-American, which I define as people who are descendants of people who were enslaved from Africa and brought to the United States, right? So sometimes, like, as a kid of immigrant, you're like, oh, I was born like American, but then I also internalize that being Black is not, like, you're seen as inferior at the bottom of the totem pole. And then your parents are trying to kind of like teach you values about being Haitian or Jamaican or whatever, but you're like, I don't feel really Haitian or Jamaican because I wasn't born there, but also I don't feel accepted by the American society as a Black person. So I have a marginalized style. It's like I reject both. And as you can imagine, that style of acculturation can often lead to a lot of our youth in that particular situation kind of being more vulnerable to being in gangs, let's say, for example, because it provides them with a sense of community. But it's a lot of like sometimes self-hatred, it's a lot of anxiety, it's a lot of stress. Anyway, so that's like the biggest piece with immigration and mental health, and what impacts on mental health is that acculturation process, that adapting to the new host country. Then there's a whole host of other things. With immigration comes a lot of experiences of loss. So if you can imagine, and I'm going to take, of course, somebody from my cultural background, which is, like I say, the Haitian person who's trying to immigrate to the United States or immigrate to Canada. So first of all, just overall, I think the common experience of all immigrants around the world is that oftentimes immigration happens in a chain. So you'll have one person immigrate to the US or Canada. And then so what happens, first psychological stress, is that you get separated from your family. So it's a chain migration. You go into the host country, you try to kind of like adapt and kind of get a job and get enough money to sponsor the rest of your family to come live in that country. But oftentimes that comes at a huge sacrifice and cost of not seeing your family for many years. For some people, it could be 10 years. You know, you could have a mom who immigrates and then she leaves her kids behind with her parents, right? And then she doesn't see her kids for 10 years. And that creates a lot of disruption in the family system, as you can imagine, the kids, a lot of attachment issues, a lot of stress, a lot of depression, a lot of sadness, a lot of grief. So that's one of the loss. Sometimes you can lose your family for a while. Another type of loss is that, as I'm sure a lot of people know, across the board, a lot of immigrants, when they immigrate in Canada or the US, they end up also losing their sometimes their social status or their careers. because sometimes in their country, they were physicians, they were engineers, they were lawyers, they were nurses, and they were maybe of the upper echelon of the social class back in their country. And then when they moved to Canada or the US for a plethora of reasons, it could be political instability, if we're talking about Haiti, or economic instability, it could be civil wars, or whatever it is, right? So when they move to Canada or the US, what happens is that, unfortunately, oftentimes their degree are not recognized. Mm-hmm. So they either have to go back to school and do equivalencies, or, you know, they have to take certain exams. But all of that, if you think about it, comes at a cost, meaning like oftentimes the immigrants come with very little means, or they're saving their last savings and they don't have enough money to go back to college and get those equivalencies. And they really have to like, oh, I have to get myself shelter, I have to get food, I have to find money to sponsor the rest of my family, I gotta make money real quick. And so that's why oftentimes you will find a lot of immigrants being cab drivers. I'm sure a lot of people here, I've met like some cab drivers from the Caribbean who will tell you the stories like, oh, I used to be an engineer back in my country, or a doctor. And the reason why cab driving is such a, you know, big thing is because you think about it, especially for the person who has a language barrier immigrating into a host society, you don't have to speak much, let's say, English to be a cab driver. And also, it's a good way to make money. I know a lot of like Haitian women that immigrate either to Canada or the US, they'll become like a, I don't know what it's called, like, it's, I think it's a nurse assistant or something like that. But also because sometimes it's like, it's quick, it's not too many months of training, and it's also a good way to start making money. But with that comes a lot. If you can imagine, if you were like, you had a prestigious profession that you studied hard for, and your identity was, oh, I'm a lawyer, I am a doctor, I am an engineer, and you come to Canada or the United States, and then you have to be a, nothing against cab drivers, but it's like your cab driver, you're pretty much, you had to lose and sacrifice your profession, all the years of education that you had in order to make money so that you can survive and you can also sponsor the rest of your family. But try to imagine as a person like, oh, if you couldn't be in the profession that you worked so hard for anymore, you might not ever be able to be an engineer because you would have to start from scratch again. So that takes on a toll emotionally as well. It can cause anxiety, it can cause depression, you know, and things like that. Other things that contribute to psychological difficulties in being an immigrant is also the shift in like the psychosocial differences between, let's say, the US and the Caribbean or Canada and the Caribbean. And more specifically, when talking about people coming from the Caribbean are coming from predominantly Black countries, and then they immigrate to Canada or the US, where it's a predominantly white country. And then you, once you, again, taking Haiti as an example, the social class in Haiti, for example, is based on, it's based on whether, because of like the French colonization and all of that, like it's based on whether you speak French or Haitian Creole, whether you're light skin or dark skin. It's also based on how much money you have. But that particular person who has internalized in Haiti is like, oh, if I'm lighter skin and I speak French and I have money, I am at the top of the social ladder. Comes into the United States or even in Canada, you learn real quick that doesn't matter whether you're light skin, dark skin, you're still considered Black, and you're internalized real quick, especially in the United States, that you're at the bottom of the totem pole. And that also creates a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress. Another thing too, coming from predominantly Black countries, is having to deal in immigrating to white, a predominantly white country, is like the instances of discrimination, racism, that you have to experience in microaggressions. And as you all know, research has shown that racism, discrimination, microaggression is highly correlated with anxiety, with depression. So that's also a huge contributing factor. Another one is really the, when I was talking about acculturation, right? So it's about, first of all, there is the loss of like the family dynamic, disruption of family dynamic because of the chain reaction, but also as most of you are listening who are American or Canadian born of Caribbean immigrant parents, it's sometimes like the distance you might feel from your parents because your parents were born in the Caribbean and you were born in Canada or the US. And so in terms of when I was talking about acculturation style, so a lot of our immigrant parents could have more of the what I call the separation and acculturation style. So let's take one example. We have a set of parents who have the separation. So it's all about, let's say, the Jamaican culture. Everything is about Jamaica. And they haven't really internalized any of the values, beliefs, attitudes of the United States or Canada. And then they are giving birth and raising a child who goes to school in the American or Canadian system, who might be maybe more bicultural or maybe assimilated. And so that creates a clash where you have the child and the parent who don't understand each other, right? Because they have different ways of viewing the world even, because that child who's bicultural, like, okay, I see a little, see some of the Jamaican things, but I also see the Canadian things or the American thing. And that can create a lot of misunderstanding, a lot of miscommunication, a lot of stress. And then for the kids, a lot of kind of like, oh, my parents don't get me. And I like, and sometimes rejecting the culture of the parent. Mm-hmm. Because also the child's like, I don't care. I was born and raised in, you know, Montreal or in Toronto or, you know, whatever, or in New York. That's what I care about more about. And sometimes that can make the parents feel sad. And in some instances in the Caribbean, especially if we're talking about the French Caribbean, you know, some parents feel like, oh my God, like, I feel like my kid is not Haitian at all, especially in the United States. Like, oh, my kid only speaks English and they only answer to me in English and I speak to them in Haitian Creole or, mm-hmm. you know, so that also can feel a lot of stress and disappointment in the parents. And then for the kid, they just feel like, why can't I be like every other American kid or Canadian kid? This is annoying. My parents don't get it. And they're always telling me about like back in Haiti, back in Jamaica, back in Grenada, like whatever it is. So I think that's kind of like the very long answer, but it's a lot of the contributing factors of what impacts like immigrant mental health. And then there's also like the trauma of however you came to the United States or Canada. Some people are refugees. Some people are in political asylum. Some people, they were like, nope, I didn't have enough time. I had to make a really last minute decision for the safety of my family and things like that. But there's also a lot of grief around like who you left behind and what you left behind and how much. And so it depends on the circumstances of like what their immigration story as well. Mm-hmm. And so, but I would say those are just the main stressors or the main things that can make the immigration experience very stressful and that can have an impact psychologically.
There's so much to unpack to what you said. And I love this conversation because there's so many layers of immigration, right? And I don't think I've really taken the time to think about it. And I love that you mentioned loss. Because I had a great aunt who lived in New York City, and we wouldn't see her very often, you know, every couple of years. And every time we'd get together, she would always be so happy to see us. She'd be like, oh, I wish I could see you guys more often. And I remember one day she was like, when we were seeing her, she was just like, I hate immigration. We're like, what? She's like, I hate that it breaks up families. She's like, if we were all like, she's like, if like everything hadn't happened and we were all like not in several cities or countries, it would just be so simple to see each other all the time and to have that bond. And when she said that, it hit me and I was like, wow, I never thought about it as immigration could be traumatic for some people, right? Mm-hmm. There is that loss, especially when you mentioned that, you know, you have one person in the family who comes to like, they just say Canada and they leave a kid behind. And then they sponsor the kid and the kid comes 10 years later. And then there's a disconnect in the relationship. And then the mother is like upset. What do you mean? This child doesn't know me. This is my child. And the child's like, I don't really know her like that.
It's like, I work full hard. I did this for you. Yes. And the child's like, well, I don't really know you. I miss my grandma that I left behind.
Yes.
You know, in Haiti or in Jamaica or wherever.
Yeah.
And it is very traumatic. There's even that person who's like, okay, I'm going to go. And it's a huge sacrifice and trauma and loss. Mm-hmm. And like, okay, I'm going to this unknown world. But it's also the American, not the American dream, the immigration dream of like, oh, it's so much better in the US. It's so much better in Canada. And then oftentimes there's disappointment because there's still struggle, even though maybe you remove the stressor of, let's say, maybe political unrest or financial instability, but it's still challenging because of all those reasons I just previously stated, right? Especially if somebody is just like, I don't speak the language of the country. I don't understand what's going on. I don't have any friends. you know, it takes time to build, even though there's certain places, as we know, where there's a big community, like, for example, Montreal is a big Haitian community, and many certain places in the U.S. is a big Haitian community, as an example, if I'm taking the Haitian immigrant example. But still, you have to build that. You have to know the people. You have to also, like, how do you cope with that grief, that loss, and not seeing for, and knowing that you're not going to see your family for many years. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, hoping that you can do something about it, saving money, but then also not knowing how to navigate, you know, all the bureaucracy that is involved with the, you know, in terms of sponsoring somebody, making people, you know, how do you get somebody to come here? What do I need to do? Who can you trust? I mean, it's just so much. But then after you do all of this and then your kid comes back and he's like, who are you?
Yeah.
Or maybe you never know, your kid might resent you. You
that
know,
too.
So that's definitely takes on an emotional toll.
Yeah. And I think also when you leave, like, let's just say you leave Haiti, you come to the US or Canada, you are literally starting from scratch. And if you're there for, like, I don't know, let's just say 10 years and you realize that this isn't really what I want, and you think about going back to Haiti and you're like, wait, the country has changed so much. I'm not the same person I was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. What am I going back to? What am I going to do? And then at the same time, you may have kids. The kids are like, what? We're going where? So.
Yeah, like, I'm not feeling that. Yeah, so there's a whole, I think, like, it's important to note to those who are listening that, if, you know, there's unique experiences as well. This immigrant, I come here and they mm-hmm. do great, but it's not, again, I've seen my own parents, even though my parents are thriving right now, but it didn't come at any cost.
That's right.
Right? And it depends, like, what socioeconomic status were you at in your country of origin? What resources did you have or not? But regardless, even though my own parents, I would say, were middle class, it was still a journey. Mm-hmm. It was still, you know, yes, they're great today, but I've seen them, being the oldest, I've seen them go through all the steps, right? And they worked hard. But mm-hmm. for some immigrants, and again, it comes with, like, what kind of resources do I have from the get-go? So if I immigrate into a country where, oh, so if you take the Haitian who can speak French, they go into Montreal, then you remove the language barrier to start with.
Right.
And it also depends on, like, did I already have family there? So that removes another barrier as well in terms of, like, I don't have to figure out the support. I have somebody there who can kind of show me the ropes. Right? So it just depends on different things, but it's still a challenge. It's still emotionally quite a journey. Mm-hmm. But most immigrants that I know are extremely resilient, but it doesn't mean that it's not painful. You can be resilient, but it doesn't mean that you don't feel pain. You don't feel sadness. You're not depressed sometimes, right? I think especially in the Haitian culture, like, resilience is mistaken for being devoid of, like, emotional pain and yeah. mental health difficulties. Like, it just means that you're able to do your best to survive in your environment despite mm-hmm. a lot of barriers and stressors. But it doesn't mean that you don't suffer.
It's true. And now I realize the importance of having a community. Because I think about mm-hmm. when my parents came to Canada from Haiti, like, they were in their early 20s. And it was like a whole bunch of them that came around the same time, and they formed this mm-hmm. community. And mm-hmm. people who are born in Canada, I don't think they realize the importance of how much that community was needed. It's like, hey, we're going through the same thing at the same time. Some of us yeah. may have nobody here. Some of us may have people there. So it was so important to rely on these people for everything almost.
Absolutely, because I do remember growing up that even though, granted, my parents, more so one parent than the other, had siblings there as well, but they also had cousins or friends of friends, and I do remember them relying on each other for carpooling us to school, for babysitting, mm-hmm. you know, and I think they really, you're right, like, especially in a lot of Caribbean culture, it's a collectivistic culture, meaning, like, it's all about the need of the community above our own needs, about helping one another. It's like all of them embracing, like, it takes a village to raise a child. Mm-hmm. So all of these are aligned. So if you were in Montreal or Toronto or New York, and you find some people going through the same journey as you, so then you felt understood, like, oh, yes. this person is also came from Jamaica. They understand what I'm talking about. We can help each other, because all the values in the Caribbean, I think, are very, very much aligned. And so you could count on your peers who are also from the Caribbean for emotional support, for childcare, mm-hmm. for, hey, can you give me a tip on how to navigate this system? On, hey, do you know of a job? And so it really depends. Like I said, every experience is different, but as an immigrant, it depends where you land. If you land in a place where there's a huge community of the people of the same cultural background, then that gives you, you know, an advantage versus if you find yourself in, let's say, a random thing, like you're Haitian and you find yourself in Texas, which, you know, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm quite sure there's not a huge Haitian community there. Then it's going to be harder mm-hmm. than if you move to New York, if you move to Boston, if you move to Montreal.
Very true. I want to go back to something that you touched on a little bit about the gap mm-hmm. between immigrant parents and their U.S. mm-hmm. or Canadian-born children. You talked a little bit about it, and it's interesting because it was never said in my mind, like in my childhood, but I understood very quickly mm-hmm. that, you know, inside my household, it was welcome to Haiti. There was no sign, but yeah. this was what it was.
Right, we knew it.
Yeah, I knew it. We spoke French. Yeah. We listened to Haitian music. We listened to French yeah. music. We ate yeah. Haitian food. Like, it was all day, mm-hmm. every day. And then as soon as I left that household, it was welcome to, well, in my case, it was welcome to English Canada, where, you know, we can do whatever you want in English, mingle with mm-hmm. your little friends. But it mm-hmm. was that gap. And I think so many of us have that similar experience, but do you think it kind of played with our minds a little bit? Like, you touched upon the understanding, like how our parents didn't understand us.
Mm. So I think psychologically, how it impacts the child of immigrant Caribbean parents, Caribbean immigrant parents, I should say, is the following. Like, I can take even my own experience with what research says. Like, it's this, what we call intergenerational conflict, right? Because mm. oftentimes, the Caribbean immigrant parent, which will either be, in terms of acculturation, at a separation where they're like not embrace or internalize anything from the host country and it's all about their Caribbean culture. Or sometimes I would say, in the case of my parents, I would say like they were like 80%, 90% Haitian and maybe a 10% French Canadian. For the most part, it's like majority kind of like their Caribbean culture. Then you have the kid, and the kid, it could go three different ways. It's either the kid is just like, depending on their experiences too and what the political landscape, what was happening during that time. Again, taking Haiti as an example, because that's what I know, but I think it's very representative of like other Caribbean countries. So if you were a child of Haitian immigrant parents who was coming up in the 80s, what was going on in the 80s in terms of like, let's say, how the US or Canadian viewed Haitian, it was all about like boat people. It was all about the stigma that Haitian are AIDS carrier. I also hear that back in the 80s too, like there was like an acronym HBO, like Haitian body odor. I don't know where that comes from. Gosh. That's another very negative stereotype. Mm-hmm. And so as a kid of Haitian immigrant parents, if that's being kind of talked about in school, it's like, oh my God, all those Haitians. And so as a kid, you're like, you don't want to identify as Haitian. Because also, as a child of immigrant parents in the U.S. and you're Black, you could easily passing for an African-American. You don't have an accent when you speak English, right? But you could reject the Haitian part, which is like the acculturation style of assimilation. It's like, nope, I'm all American. Right? But that creates, as you can imagine, a clash between this kid and his parents. Like, maybe the parents are like very much about Haiti and the kid's like, no, 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 no. And so it's hurting the parents that their kids are just rejecting their culture. And then it's hurting the kid that it's like, mom, dad, you don't understand, like, mm-hmm. being Haitian sucks because of all these things. And then you can have the immigrant child who embraces, who kind of learns to navigate, which I think that's what you're saying, Cindy. And I think it was the same strategy that I use, is that I knew at home is Haiti. At school, it was like Quebecois in my experience growing up in Montreal. But also you could have like the Haitian American kid who's like, yep, I know that when I'm at school, it's all about the US, and when I'm at home, it's all about. So you learn like what you call the bicultural nature. So it's just like, oh, there's certain things about the Haitian culture that I love and I hold it in and I ascribe to. And then there's also some things about the Haitian culture that I reject, but I take a little bit of Haitian things and I also take a little bit of American things. And there's some things about the American culture that, no. So you take a little bit of both. And that, again, has been correlated with, like, really positive mental health outcomes. But also the kid still might feel misunderstood a little bit by the parents. Because sometimes what I've noticed in my case is that maybe I was, like, if I had to put a percentage, like, maybe I was 60% French-Canadian and 40% Haitian, right? But because I wasn't 100% Haitian, then the part of me that was a little bit more French-Canadian was not understood with parents who were mostly Haitian in their ways. Things like, which I think our audience member who are kids of immigrants can relate to, because I do remember complaining about that with my peers who were also children of immigrants from all over the world, which is kind of like our parents always telling us, but in my country, things were the this way and that way and that way. And you're like, but I'm here, so I don't know what you're talking about. And then also the incredible emphasis on education, which is a good thing, but our parents were very strict on us. And then also certain things, like the thing that I remember vividly from growing up is just like all of us, for some reason, we were not allowed to sleep at anybody's house, or just like not allowed to date until you're 18, or not, like just kind of like that strict, where if you're growing up in the US or you're growing up in any parts of Canada, what you're learning at school is like, it's very normal to start dating at 14, 15. It's very normal to be able to have certain freedoms or privileges at an early age than the Caribbean culture allows, right? So then that's where the friction comes. And even as teenagers, you all know, like, we want more freedom, more autonomy. Again, taking the Haitian culture, they're not about autonomy and independence, no matter how old you are. So it was difficult to navigate that. So there's I remember the frustration, like, why can't you just, my friends can do that. And I don't be like, I don't care about your friends and what they said. And just seeing that all your friends can do certain things, but not you.
Yeah. Right?
And I remember, like, my prom, I couldn't stay and do the after party. It was just like, what? You're going to come pick me up at 11:30. Frustrating.
Yes.
And sometimes it can create a lot of sadness and a lot of, like, I feel misunderstood. And the parents are on their side is like, oh my God, I don't get this kid. And the kid's like, I don't get them.
Mm-hmm.
And that can create a lot of distance.
Yeah.
And a lot of disruption in their relationship.
No, absolutely. And sometimes it was also understanding the school system. So for them, it was like this foreign concept. And you're like, no, this is how we do, like, long division here. Why are you showing me a different way? No, don't. Yeah. This is not how the teacher taught us. And then there's like this disconnect. What do you mean?
First of all, I think there's a generational thing where like the teaching methods have changed over the years. And then there's like, how is math or science taught in North American countries versus in the Caribbean? So there's also that clash too. But thinking about education too, is like a lot of Caribbean parents, the way that the education system is in the Caribbean versus the way that the education system is in the US or Canada are totally different. So parents oftentimes, that's another stressor to navigate out of the loss. When I was talking about psychosocial differences, there's that too. But I've worked with a lot of parents where I had to educate them, okay, in the US or in Canada, this is what is expected of you as parents. This is what the system looks like. This is that. And in a lot of Caribbean countries, I don't know if it changed over the years, but in the educational system, again, using Haiti as an example, but I think it's the common experience of a lot of people from the Caribbean in terms of the educational system is like the teachers are king.
Yes.
Teachers decide everything. And the parents are like, once my gift goes to school, they're in your hands. I trust you. And blah, blah, blah. And that's not the way it works in the US.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the way it works in Canada, because parents have to be, the expectation of parents is that you have to be more involved, right? And so oftentimes a Caribbean parent don't understand that. So that also is stressful. It's like, what do you mean? There's so many things that are different and I have to adapt to it. And it's just a headache. Also, the kid is frustrated. It's like, well, why didn't you come to my things? Like, for example, when I was like the really high emphasis on education. And so for them, it's like, then arts and sports don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But then you come into the US or Canada where it's just like, no, you need to have a well-rounded kid. And that's also part of like your education to also be in the arts and also you're a well-rounded kid, right? And then there's the stigma of like, art? No, we have to study all the time. Like, at, you know, sports is just for play.
You're wasting time.
Yeah, so a lot of my own siblings, and because I was not athletic, so I'm not even going to say me, but my siblings and my cousins and friends of mine who are also children of Caribbean immigrants, they all have the same complaint, which is like, my mom only came to one game. My parents only came to, you know, whereas it's very much in the Canadian American fabric to like, no, you go to games, you go see your kids, you go support them, you go support all activities, educational activities, as well as athletic activities and artistic activities, like dance, you know, whatever. And that was also kind of like, as a kid of immigrant, you're like, you feel like, this is sad, like, all of my friends' parents are here except my parents.
Very true.
And that's really, it can take a toll. You know, my siblings still talk about it. So they understand, but at the same time, they're like, it sucks. And I think another way that a lot of people my generation have done, I see my own cousins with their own kids. It's like a 180. They're like at every game. They're even like coaches. Yes. They're managers. They're just like, no, I'm not going to do that to my kids.
It's true.
But they're also more American.
Yes. And I also see there's more of an understanding of emotions. Like I see the second generation, they talk about feelings more. I think, you know, our parents were a little bit, like my parents, maybe they were a little bit on survival mode and, you know, like your feelings. Okay, like, okay, don't be so dramatic. But now I see with the other generation, there's more talk about your emotional health, which is so important.
Because our generation or the generation after us who were born, raised in Canada, in the US, like I said, we've internalized a lot of the value belief system of North America, where speaking about emotions is more normalized. It's part of the cultural fabric. Whereas if we're thinking about a lot of Caribbean culture, that's not what it is. It's just like you don't talk about your feelings. Hey, how are you feeling today? Blah, blah, blah. No. That's not what you know. It's like, again, it's like we gotta survive, we gotta hustle, let's go, 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 go. Right? Mm-hmm. We're resilient. But again, I think that is the mistake of most people. They don't realize or are unwilling to acknowledge, like, even though I'm making ends meet, I'm making it, I'm doing it, I'm resilient, it doesn't mean that I'm not exhausted, emotionally exhausted at the end of the day. It doesn't mean that I'm not grieving. It doesn't mean that I'm not sad. But I think sometimes, because there's such stigma around mental health in the Caribbean community, that, you know, it's like, nope, I'm resilient. Nope, I'm fine. And if I start thinking about all my feelings, like, oh, I don't have time for this right now. Like, I'm not going to be able to do what I need to do. So you're right. Yes, it is a survival mechanism, but at what cost? Because sometimes then it gets translated into physical symptoms. Like, it could be high blood pressure, just like all the physiological impact of stress, high blood pressure, you know, heart issues, ulcers, stomach issues, GI issues, you know, even like chronic pain. Like, really, it takes a toll on your body, especially if you're not able to release those emotions that you're clearly experiencing, but that your culture is telling you, no, it's fine. And that's why, like, kind of like depression, in a lot of symptoms of depression are manifested physiologically. So in the Haitian culture, as an example, again, a lot of the symptoms of depression can come up as, you'll see a lot of Haitian complaining about, oh, their headache, their stomach ache, but we talk like somatic complaints. And then when they go to the doctor, there's nothing wrong organically with their stomach or their GI system or their brain. And so it's definitely psychological.
I'm so glad you talked about the physical effects that can have on our bodies, because I think sometimes we only think about the minds, but I'm like, your mind and your gut, it's connected, right? So it makes sense for, you know, you're feeling anxious, you're depressed, that you may have a headache or you may have digestive issues. So it makes sense.
I mean, yes, it's all interconnected. And my thing is just like, if you don't process your emotion or you don't find a way to, you know, think about, I don't know, Cindy, about your parents. Like, I'm like, self-care? Did my mom do self-care? Like, where, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, how did they cope with their stress? I can only think one thing about my own father is that he plays piano and that releases his stress. But in terms of like, are they talking about, man, this is tough. Like when they were with their, when we were talking about community, at least from what I remember, I don't think they spoke necessarily. I think it was unspoken, the commonality and the struggle and the emotional toll. But I think they use themselves as, at least I can laugh with this person yes. here. This person speaks my language. Mm-hmm. This person gets like, oh, they can all like commiserate like our kids in their like American way, you know, you know, and things like that. But I don't think that it was in normal conversation to be like, let's talk about where we're at. Like, you know, I'm grieving the people I left behind in Haiti or Jamaica or wherever. Or like, I'm stressing out about making ends meet. Or, you know, I think they were more focused on like, how can we just thrive amidst the adversity? But then when you don't stop and kind of process your emotions, as I often tell my patient, is that at some point, it's going to blow up in the face, right? Because you hold it in. And then your body takes the toll because it needs to go somewhere. So if it doesn't come out, then it's going to obviously translate it into physical symptoms. And then at some point, or you could have a burnout and just not be functional at all. Or the pain that you're experiencing, the physical chronic pain, like at some point your body's going to be like, you got to stop. You're not listening to me? You got to stop, right? And so we want to kind of avoid that. But it's really very cultural in terms of cultural understanding of mental health, but also acceptance versus stigma and, you know, all that stuff. But then you have our generation, we've learned in school, like, oh, it's normal for us. Like, yeah, mom, I have to go see a therapist. What do you mean therapist? Like, so there's this clash as well.
Yeah. Nessa, this was awesome. This was a great conversation. Thank you for shedding light on the mental health in the Caribbean community. This was awesome.
Thank you so much. There's so much more we could talk about.
But I know.
Yeah, I know we have to keep it short and sweet.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you. My pleasure.
That was such a great conversation I had with Vanessa. I hope you found it insightful just as much as I did. One thing I took away from this conversation is that immigration is so layered and that mental health is so important. We must take care of our minds. Don't forget to share this episode with a friend. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And please subscribe. Follow me on Instagram at introverted_queenblog. Thank you so much for tuning in. Take good care, and until next time.